Yes, observational studies. We know that women are more predisposed to things like dry eye, which is a big one, especially in perimenopause and menopause. And we can talk more about that. Glaucoma is higher in women, cataracts, macular degeneration. And then there's a bunch of other autoimmune conditions that really predominantly affect women, including, I was mentioning earlier, Hashimoto's and what we call thyroid eye disease that goes along with Hashimoto's. You've probably seen ads on TV. Now there are all these drugs that can treat it, but not everybody needs the drugs, by the way. But these all are more common in women. Now, why? Something about that extra X chromosome, maybe, but also it is probably the changes in hormones and not just estrogen, but also progesterone and testosterone.
Hey, friends, welcome to The Good Life with Michelle Lamoureux, a show for women in midlife who want to live happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives. I'm your host, Michelle Lamoureux, a self-love coach and the author of Design a Life You Love. And together we're going to be doing just that. Each week, I bring on world-class experts, best-selling authors, leading entrepreneurs, and also do solo casts with the intention of inviting you to get connected to what you really desire from your life. This show is produced with love every week. There's inspiration and actionable tips in every episode because I want to see women playing a starring role in their lives instead of living on the sidelines. Be sure to join the Good Life Community newsletter over at thegoodlifecoach.com for more inspiration and tips to live your best midlife. And make sure you're following the show on your favorite podcast player. I'm so glad that you're here. Hey, friends, welcome back. I'm so excited today because we're going to be learning about eye health as we age. Joining us is Dr. Ronnie Banik, who is a double board certified neuro-ophthalmologist. She completed her MD at Brown University, residency at UC Irvine, and fellowship at Wilmer Eye Institute. Dr. Banik runs a private practice based in New York City and is a professor, associate professor of ophthalmology at Mount Sinai. Dr. Banik is also certified in integrative and functional medicine. She focuses on the root cause of eye diseases and uses strategies based on nutrition, botanicals, lifestyle modification, and supplements. Dr. Ronnie is often featured as an expert in the media. She's been voted Castle Connolly Top Doctor and New York Magazine's Best Doctor in Ophthalmology annually since 2017. Dr. Banik is also the author of two best-selling books, Beyond Carrots, Best Foods for Eye Health A to Z, and Dr. Ronnie's Visionary Kitchen. Welcome, Dr. Ronnie.
Oh, thank you so much for having Michelle. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm a fan of preventative medicine. And I'll be honest with you, I've done this show for 5 years. I've not covered eye health. And I'm so excited to have your expertise on the show. And where I'd like to begin is actually the fact that you have functional medicine training. So I've seen functional medicine doctors, but I didn't know that an ophthalmologist would have that training. And I'm just curious what led you to pursue that additional certification.
Yeah. So first of all, I'll just share with you, I'm probably one in two ophthalmologists in the country who have dual training.
Okay.
And it's something that I hope to raise awareness for, the importance of having a preventative approach to eye health, a holistic integrative approach to eye health. So one of my missions is to educate my colleagues in ophthalmology and optometry. But regarding your question, like, how did I get into this? So it actually began with a personal journey of mine, a personal health journey. And most practitioners do have some kind of personal journey that leads them to functional medicine. So for me, it was migraine. And there was a period in my life, basically like in my mid-40s, when I started to get pretty severe migraines. Mm-hmm. And I would get migraines before, but they were, you know, every 2 years, every 6 months. It wasn't that bad. But at this point in my life, it was very stressful. We had just moved. We'd done construction. My daughter was young. I was working full time. I was really overwhelmed and a lot of stress. I would get headaches every single day. So I would wake up with a stabbing pain behind my eye every single day. And, you know, I live in New York City. So I went to some of the top doctors here and all I got was prescription after prescription. Hey, try this. This is the latest drug on the market, or maybe this is going to work for you, or maybe we should increase the dose. And none of it really worked for me. And it was giving me side effects. I was getting brain fog and I was sleepy and I couldn't even work. So I knew I needed to find another solution. So I was talking to a friend. He's actually the other ophthalmologist who's also certified in functional medicine. And he said, have you ever done an elimination diet? And I said, I looked at him. I was like, what's that? I don't even know what that is. What's an elimination diet? So he explained that to me. He explained what functional medicine was. And he said, you know what? Maybe you should go to one of their conferences and just check it out. And maybe it's going to help you with your migraine. So I went and I was blown away. Just 1 week of what I learned, like totally changed my thought on health, about medicine, about how I practice, how I take care of my own health. And so I started to implement some of those changes, diet, lifestyle, supplementation. And that's when my migraine finally started to turn around. So it took years. But then I decided to get certified in functional medicine. That's really what brought me to where I am today.
I had a feeling that it was a personal health issue. Every functional medicine doctor that I've had on the show did have something personally that they were trying to address and were tired of sort of just the traditional way of just throwing pharmaceuticals at it and wanted to go deeper to root cause, which is really at the heart of functional medicine, right? Just for the sake of my audience, in case they're not familiar with it.
Absolutely. It's getting to why there's a problem, not just putting a Band-Aid on the problem, but figuring out where it's coming from, the root cause, finding out where the imbalances are in the body. So in functional medicine, we think of not just individual organs, but organ systems and how they work together, how they're all balanced. So our hormones, our immune system, our gut, our brain, our skin, it all comes together. And the eyes are related to all of that. So they're not isolated. You know, many of us think of our eyes as these two little isolated organs. They're intricately connected to every other part of our body. So, you know, when I think about diagnosing eye disease and managing eye disease, I look at it with the lens of functional medicine. Where is it coming from? Is it inflammation? Is it an infection? Is it oxidative stress? Where is the problem coming from? And how can we treat it at its root cause?
Okay. I love this so much. And I'm going to read something I read actually on a social media post that you did, because now I'm curious, is this something that you and your colleague who's also trained in functional medicine would do as an eye doctor that others won't? You write that the eye is not just a window to your soul, but to your overall health. Over 200 medical conditions ranging from diabetes to multiple sclerosis to cancer can be diagnosed based on an eye exam. Tell us more. And again, is this something that you're seeing through not just your lens as an ophthalmologist, but also through functional medicine? Because I'm going actually for an eye exam next week, and I have no expectation that they'll be going beyond telling me the health of my eyes. So just help us understand this a little bit more.
Absolutely. So first of all, the eye is a direct extension of the brain. It's part of the central nervous system. So many brain diseases show up in the eye. For example, you mentioned multiple sclerosis. So oftentimes people who are diagnosed with MS, one of the very first symptoms they have is vision loss. And then they ultimately may get diagnosed. So there's a lot we can tell based off of an eye exam. So there are some common things that most eye doctors will look for. Like for example, diabetes. That's a basic thing that if you go for your annual checkup, you get your eyes dilated, they look in the back. I know everyone hates to get their eyes dilated because you're blurry, but it's so critical to get that into your health. So yes, we look for diabetes, we look for high blood pressure. But what sometimes when there are more subtle symptoms, symptoms that are kind of creeping up gradually, not, you know, acute sudden changes, but, you know, mild kind of chronic things, there are findings on the eye exam that can help guide us into what's causing it. For example, there are many patients I've diagnosed with Lyme disease, chronic Lyme disease, based off of findings on their eye exam, or for example, lupus or Hashimoto's. That's a big one. There are some really, really subtle things that can happen with our eyes, with our eyelids, that may point to thyroid being the problem, whether it's Hashimoto's or Graves. So yes, most eye doctors can look for these things, but in a cursory eye exam, most probably won't. So as a functional medicine provider, I really do take the time to dive deep and try to really tease out, you know, is this normal? Is this not normal? Is there any subtle sign there that can give me an idea of what's going on with the rest of the body? But it's a great question. Thank you for bringing that up, because it is true. There are over 200 medical conditions, and most eye doctors don't really advertise that, like, come see your eye doctor so we can help you diagnose all these things. You know, they say, come see me so I can help you keep your eyes healthy. But there's a whole other component to that that really should be emphasized.
So I just want to dive a little bit deeper because I think this is fascinating. So will a regular ophthalmologist without the functional medicine training, they're not as likely, I mean, it sounds like diabetes is something that they are looking for potentially and some of these other things, but they're not as likely to maybe bring up others, or would they? Like, let's say you mentioned MS, that you could have vision loss.
Really obvious. So with MS, it's usually pretty obvious. Like people have something called optic neuritis, where they have inflammation of the optic nerve, they lose a lot of vision, they're very symptomatic. But some of the other conditions, especially the autoimmune conditions, tend to be very subtle.
Okay.
For example, I'll give you, it's relatively rare, but there's something called antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, which is related to lupus, and it can cause blood clots. And a lot of people don't know that they have this problem until they have a blood clot. And so, yes, blood clot can show up in your legs and your lungs, but sometimes it'll show up in the eye. Wow. Or it'll have symptoms where people have transient loss of vision. So it's not actual vision loss, or permanent vision loss, but let's say for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, their vision goes blurry and then it comes back again. And we do the workup. Well, I do the workup. This is what I'm looking for. Something serious, but insidious. Something that's not, you know, in your face, but something more subtle that could be more, you know, related to something else going on in the body. So it's like being a detective. And that's why I love it so much, because it really is taking all the clues, listening to the patient. That's really the most important. I would say 90% of the time, just by listening to the patient or my patient and asking them the right questions, I can come to the diagnosis even before I examine them. So it really is, it's a team effort. How much you care with your doctor, how much your doctor's looking for certain things, and doing the workup and then getting the right diagnosis.
Okay. And how frequent do you recommend an eye exam? Is this an annual thing preventatively? You're shaking your head. So tell us.
Actually, I was on another podcast recently, and this was, you know, like a light bulb went off in her head, because she said, no one ever told me this. Like, I need to go get an eye checkup every year. And it is recommended, especially after the age of 40.
Okay.
You know, if you're younger, if you're in your 20s, 30s, things are good, you're not really having vision problems, you may not necessarily need to go every year, maybe every 5 years. But once you hit 50, there are things that happen. We all know that. You know, there are things that change with our health. Some of them are asymptomatic. So that's why it is important to get that annual checkup. And again, we're looking for eye diseases and systemic diseases. In terms of the eye diseases we're looking for glaucoma.
Yep.
We're looking for diabetes. We're looking for macular degeneration.
Yes.
And in the early stages, none of this has symptoms. You wouldn't know. So the only way you would know is if you get that dilated exam.
Okay. And a regular ophthalmologist is going to do this too, since there's only two of you in the country. And unless if you live in New York, you can go find Dr. Ronnie, but for the rest of us. Okay. So they will be able to flag some of
they
this stuff.
Yes. Okay. But you have to get that dilated exam. So if you go in and say, I just need a pair of glasses, that's not going to come.
Yeah.
You need that dilated exam.
Yes. And every year I get my, or whatever it is, 2 years, the contact lens and the vision exam. Yeah, but yeah. I am due.
They make your pupils big for a couple of hours. That will ensure that you're getting the full checkup.
Yes. And actually this time I'm going to an ophthalmologist. So the other one is an optometrist, and she does gives me my contact lens prescription. So I'm going to go get because I think I know that I'm due, and my dad's been telling me go get it. And So let's cover some of the things you talked about. So my audience is midlife women. Are there certain things that come up specifically as we enter 40 plus, or things that we're more susceptible to because of the hormonal changes that are happening in perimenopause and menopause?
Yes. And I hate to say this, but it's really unfortunately true. Almost every type of eye disease is more common in women than men. Hmm. Almost everything.
With the drop in estrogen and... Yes.
And we don't, you know, unfortunately, there's not enough research to figure out what really is the problem. Large scale studies, we don't know. But yes, observational studies, we know that women are more predisposed to things like dry eye, which is a big one, especially in perimenopause and menopause. And we can talk more about that. Glaucoma is higher in women, cataracts, macular degeneration. And then there's a bunch of other autoimmune conditions that really predominantly affect women, including, I was mentioning earlier, Hashimoto's and what we call thyroid eye disease. Yes. That goes along with Hashimoto's. You've probably seen ads on TV. Now there are all these drugs that can treat it, but not everybody needs the drugs, by the way. But these all are more common in women. Now, why? Something about that extra X chromosome, maybe, but also it is probably the changes in hormones, and not just estrogen, yes, but also progesterone and testosterone.
Yes.
That's what I think a lot of women don't realize. It's not just the female sex hormones that are important. It's also the male sex hormone. So testosterone and DHEA in some cases can really lead to a lot of vision issues.
Okay. So let's break down some of the ones you talked about. Dry eyes. What technically, I mean, I would say my eyes are dry, but what really constitutes dry, like truly like a diagnosis of dry eyes?
Well, people may have symptoms or they may not have symptoms and they just get it discovered on an eye exam. But when people have symptoms, it feels like there's something in your eye, like it's scratchy, it's burning, it's irritated, like you have gravel or sand inside your eye. That's how dry eye feels. And it's basically the surface of the eye.
Yes.
If you want to pull out my eye model.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, please.
Yeah, I have it right here.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's look at the eyeball.
The eye is really complicated.
That's fascinating.
There's a lot of different parts to it, but
please.
I'll just open it up so you can get a peek inside of what the eye looks like on the inside.
Yes.
But the front of the eye is the cornea. So this clear dome-shaped structure is the cornea. Looks like this. And this is what dries out in dry eyes. So imagine over this, you have a tear film that's lubricating. And sometimes the tear film, the tears just evaporate. They lose moisture. And so the surface gets dry. And every time you're blinking, your eyelid is rubbing up against the cornea and it's creating friction and it's creating that uncomfortable sensation. So that's dry eye.
Okay.
And in most cases of dry eye, the reason why it happens, we're now getting to the root cause of this, we have these tiny little glands in our eyelids. Like if you look in the mirror really close, you pull down your lid, you see the eyelashes. Inside the eyelashes, you see these little dots.
Yes.
Those are the openings of the glands. Those are actually your eyelid glands that you're seeing. Those little dots on the inner part of your eyelashes are glands. They secrete oils. And as we get into menopause, perimenopause, menopause, those glands don't secrete oils well enough. And similar to other parts of the body that dry out during menopause, the glands dry out and they don't produce healthy oils. Then the eyes dry out.
Okay.
So that's what's happening here. And testosterone does play a role. So again, it's not just estrogen and progesterone dropping.
Yes.
Testosterone also falls. And there are receptors for all of those hormones on these tiny little glands.
Mm.
So it is something important. You know, if you're having dry eye, and let's say you've tried the standard of care treatments like putting in drops, et cetera. If it's not helping, talk to your eye doctor and ask them, can you take a look at my glands? Are my glands healthy? Are they not healthy? What can I do to keep them healthy? And in my office, what I do is I actually do, there's an infrared camera that I use to image the glands so I can actually see them.
Wow.
They're inside the eyelid, but with the camera, we can actually see the glands. We can see what they look like. Are they healthy? Are they atrophying? Are they kind of shrinking and dying off? Are they blocked? Are they clogged? Sometimes people will get styes because their glands get clogged. So there's a lot that can be investigated when it comes to dry eye that sometimes you need to kind of push your eye doctor a little bit. Like, can you help me figure this out? Let's go a little bit further. So ask those questions and, you know, hopefully you get some answers that will then lead to solutions that work. But there's a lot that can be done.
Okay. So there is a lot that can be done. I was going to move on to the next thing, but before I do, I've worn contacts since I think I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any particular conditions? I imagine dry eyes could potentially be one of them if you're a contact lens wearer. So any particular conditions that arise, and I'm guilty of probably not letting my eyes breathe enough. So just talk to us a little, because I'm sure there's a lot of contact lens wearers listening to this episode.
I wear contacts too.
Okay,
It is a problem. I mean, especially as you're going through hormonal changes, if you wear contacts, it is much more likely that you'll have dry eye simply because the contact is interfering with tear film circulation. There's just not enough moisture getting to the surface of the eye. So if that's happening, I would recommend kind of limiting your contact lens wear. So if you're normally wearing them like 16 hours a day, 18 hours a day,
you'd
be cut back a little bit. And
yes,
some lenses do say, oh, this is a 2-week wearable lens.
Yeah.
Do not wear it for 2 weeks. That is really... it's really a travesty that they market them like that, because if you wear them overnight, the risk of an infection goes sky high. It's 8 times more that you will get a corneal ulcer or, you know, very serious ulcer if you wear your contacts at night. So even though it may say extended wear use, wear them for 2 weeks, take them out at night and just let your, like you were saying, let your eyes breathe. Wear some glasses once in a while. You know, if you're home, wear your glasses, don't wear your contacts. And the other thing you can do is if you're really suffering from dry eye and you can't tolerate the contacts, this is another thing you can ask your doctor. There are lots of different brands, but also different formulations for contacts. And some of them have better moisture penetration. Yes. So the oxygen permeability. So ask your doctor to try out different ones, try different samples, see which ones you feel better with. So there's always a solution. There's never like, okay, we've hit the end. There's nothing more we can do. The good news is there's a lot we can do in terms of keeping patients comfortable.
Okay. That's super helpful. And so it doesn't necessarily cause increased risk for eye issues though, with contacts?
With contacts? Mm-hmm. It depends, you know, your contacts, first of all, they have to fit right. If they're not fitting right, they're tight. Yes. They can cause problems. They can cause abrasions, erosions, which are very painful episodes where the surface kind of gets pulled off by the tight contact. Again, there's a risk of infection, corneal ulcers, et cetera. So, you know,
but
just
the wearing of them itself isn't necessarily, unless assuming they're fitting well and you're letting your eyes breathe.
I think if you're wearing them and it's comfortable and, you know, you're having good contact lens hygiene, you're washing your hands, taking them out at night, I think it's very safe. I mean, I've worn contacts since I was like 20 years old. And
Like me. Yeah. For a long time. Yeah. And, I do the dailies. At some point, I just stopped. I was doing the 2 weeks, and a few years ago, I went to the dailies, and I like that.
Did it make a difference for you?
Yeah. Do you not do that? I do the dailies. I love it.
I do too. It made a huge difference. Like, I was really suffering with my contacts, and
yes,
I
me too.
Get on a plane, like it was so bad. The dryness could not see on a plane with my contacts on. But then when I switched to the dailies, it made a big, big difference. So, and it's also great. Like if you swim, you shouldn't, first of all, if you swim with extended wear contacts, you should just throw them out. You shouldn't keep them in. Yes. So the dailies are great because then you just wear them and you throw them out and then you don't have to worry about it.
Totally. Totally. Actually, it's funny. I just got a shipment. They're like sitting on my desk for some reason. LASIK, are you a fan of correcting your vision with the lasers? I'm just curious. Especially with your functional medicine training, I'm just curious because I've thought about, I'll tell you when I really thought about it during COVID. And I was like, gosh, what if you couldn't get to a doctor? What if my glasses broke? What if I ran out of contacts and there was shipping issues? Like it just made me think, maybe it's time to think about doing this. I'd love to get your input on that.
A lot of people opted to get LASIK during when things started to open up with COVID. Yes. So a lot of people opted for those very reasons, you know?
Totally.
So what I'll tell you is, LASIK is very safe. It's been around for decades now, you know, since the 80s. We have a lot of data on it. And in over 99.9% of people, it's great. No problems whatsoever. But if you already have dry eye, getting LASIK will make it worse. Guaranteed, it will make it worse. And sometimes it's just worse for a couple of months, but other times it's worse like indefinitely. So that's one thing to be aware of. If you have dry eye, be very, very cautious. Ask your doctor, like, am I a good candidate? Also, depending on how old you are, LASIK may not be the best option for you. So the older people get, let's say they're, you know, in their mid-40s, early 50s, it may be not be a good idea to get LASIK at that age versus if you were like in your 20s or 30s. And the reason is because as we get older, there are changes in the eye. And one of those changes is people start to develop cataracts. And yes, there are things you can do to prevent cataracts, but almost everyone will develop cataracts later on in life, definitely by their 70s, 80s, 90s. And so if you're 50, and let's say you have the beginnings of a cataract, and then you get the LASIK done, and then 3 years later, that cataract has to be removed, the LASIK was really moot. Like there was really no point in getting it because when they do the cataract surgery, they can correct for the power of your eye with the cataract surgery. So it can take care of it. And so why get two separate surgeries done when you can just wait a couple of years and get one done and take care of it all? So that's my recommendation for LASIK. And this is another thing. So If you go to any ophthalmology conference and you look around, you know, the big conference hall, there are like 20, 30,000 ophthalmologists there.
Yes.
40,000 maybe. You look around the room, most eye doctors are wearing glasses or contacts. So you have to ask yourself, okay, why is it that people who get the procedure done or who do the procedure don't get it done on themselves, right? You have to think about that. Like, why is it? And the reason is because we know what can happen. We know, okay, it's very rare. The risk is maybe one in 5,000. But if it happens, if you have a complication, if you have an ulcer, if you have an infection, that's your vision. And if you're not willing to take that risk, then don't do it. So as ophthalmologists, we rely on our vision. You know, we operate, we do everything with our eyes to be able to examine patients. It's not worth it to most ophthalmologists to get the procedure done, because even if you're that one in 5,000 person who has a complication, that's 100% to you, right? Overall, it's very rare, but if it happens to you, that's 100% to you. So most eye doctors will probably opt not to do it, even though, yes, it's a very safe procedure. So I just wanted to put that out there. I don't want to scare anybody, but just take it with a grain of salt.
No, I appreciate it. I love the you being candid about it, because that's why you're here. We want your expertise. And I'll be 53 in a few weeks. And so I don't know at this point. Now I'll have to think about it, especially. So tell us about cataracts, because I had a friend who's in her late 40s go to the doctor, and her doctor said, you have old eyes, and that she was going to need a new lens. I think she was talking cataracts. So tell us, what are cataracts and when do they start?
So let's go back to the eye model here.
Please.
So let's open it up. And inside, there's a lot going on inside the eye. There's a lot of different layers of structures, but this is the cornea, like I said before.
Yes.
Okay. This is the iris, which is the colored part of the eye, which we all see here, like blue or green or brown. Behind the iris, behind the pupil, is the lens. This is the lens. And this is clear, and it's kind of like an oval shape. Well, kind of an oval shape, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's like a disc, basically. And when we get older, this is clear when we're young. When we get older, there's oxidative stress that happens in the lens. And because of free radicals, et cetera, the lens starts to harden and starts to stiffen, and it starts to yellow. And so imagine you have a window that when you're young, your window's clear, crystal clear, you can see everything. As you get older, there is more and more opacity that builds up. So imagine this was a yellow lens. If we put it right here, right? The light that comes in through the outside of the eye, it's getting scattered by this yellow lens. It's not going to be focused properly onto the back of the eye. So that's what a cataract is. It's when the lens becomes yellow with oxidative stress, with age. And again, if you live long enough, it's going to happen to you.
We all are going to get it for the most part. Most of us.
We're all going to get it. Now, the question is whether it actually impacts your vision, because some people will have mild yellowing, but they still see 20/20. So they don't have to do anything about it. But it's if your vision starts to decrease because this lens is so opaque that you can't see through it, then you should consider cataract surgery. So I'll tell you, like, both my parents, they both are in their 70s. They had cataract surgery. They're doing great. It's a very common procedure. It's very safe. I know a lot of people kind of shy away from it.
And the eyes, it's scary. It's like why I didn't get LASIK. You know, it's like, it's
scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you know, a lot of people will ask me, you know, you're a functional medicine doctor. What can I do to prevent my cataracts? Can I use drops? Can I dissolve them with drops? Can I do this? Can I do red light therapy? And I really wish I could say, like, there is this magic, you know, cure for cataracts, but there isn't yet. I do think there will be. I think that probably in the next 5 years, there probably will be some technology, whether it's a medication or laser or some treatment that can help to reverse those signs of aging. But for now, really, the only option is, well, you can prevent it from worsening. There's a lot you can do to prevent it from worsening. So UV protection. Yes. UVA, UVB protection in your sunglasses or a big hat to block out the sun.
Yeah.
You can increase your dietary intake of fruits and veggies to get more antioxidants like vitamins A, vitamin C, vitamin E. That will help.
Yes.
And maybe even glutathione. But, you know, again, a lot of people are turning to drops and other kinds of solutions that really aren't proven. And again, I wish I could say otherwise, but I don't want to lead people down, you know, with false hope that, if you do this drop, it's going to take care of your cataract. The better thing to say is, okay, if you take the right steps, protect your eyes from light, eat right for your sight, then you can prevent the cataract from getting worse.
Okay. And just quickly tell us, what is the surgery? What does it involve It's replacing that lens or clean. What are they
it
doing
is,
to that?
Yeah. So it's a surgery where we, it's under the microscope. We go in, we remove the lens that's opaque. We take it out completely. We use an ultrasound machine to break it up into pieces, take it out of the eye, and then we put a clear implant in its place. And that implant is, it stays with you for life. Nobody can tell you have it because it's in the back of the eye, but it's like having glasses inside your eye. So, you know, you were saying earlier with your, you know, should you get LASIK or not? What I would say is if you're in your 50s, it's probably better just to wait. And ultimately, who knows, at some point, probably you're going to have to consider cataract surgery, then have your doctor adjust the lens power so that you don't need glasses anymore. So that's the option, is to wait until you have cataract surgery, get the right lens so you're not going to, you'll be able to see distance. They have these lenses now that are incredible. They're called premium IOLs because they're not covered by insurance. You have to pay a little bit extra for it, but it gives you a depth of focus so you can see distance, the computer for reading without having to wear glasses. So that's a good option.
That seems pretty high tech.
Very high tech, yeah.
Talk to us about macular degeneration. Is that a genetic thing as well as just it happens? Like, does it tend to run in families? And can you just explain what it is? Because I think it does run in my family.
It definitely runs in families. So there are many genes associated with macular degeneration. There are over 50 genes that are associated. The unfortunate thing is we don't really understand what all those genes do. But we know that they probably are involved in inflammation, in oxidative stress, and mitochondrial dysfunction. So there's a lot of changes that happen in macular degeneration before people actually lose vision. There's different stages of it. There's early, intermediate, advanced. In the early stage, there are no symptoms whatsoever. You have no idea you have it. That's why you have to go see your eye doctor once a year so they can make sure that you don't have it. Yeah. In the later stages, people can, I'll show you where macular degeneration tends to affect the eyes.
Yes. And what is happening? Tell us why is it affecting your vision? Yeah.
Yeah. So this, I took out everything from inside the eye, but this is the back of the eye. This is the retina right here. And you can see all the blood vessels in the retina. This yellow spot right here is the macula. Okay. So it's a part of the entire retina. It's the central part of the retina. And this is what's responsible for our 20/20 vision. And what happens in macular degeneration is that around this area, there are waste deposits that form underneath the retina. And these waste deposits don't get cleared by the body. When they don't get cleared, they can cause inflammation and they can cause new blood vessels growing. So these blood vessels are healthy blood vessels, but the blood vessels that grow in macular degeneration are not healthy blood vessels. They leak. When they leak fluid and leak blood, they cause vision loss. So imagine it's in your central part of your vision. So you may still be able to see on the outside, like on the periphery, you'll still have vision, but in the middle, imagine there's a blotch where you can't see through it. And that's what macular degeneration causes, is central loss of vision, which if you think about it is really potentially debilitating because we use our central vision to read, to use our devices, to drive. It's really, really debilitating. The good news is there's a lot you can do to prevent macular degeneration. Okay. I'm actually just gave a lecture this morning at my hospital about it, but there's so much you can do nutritionally to prevent macular degeneration. If you eat a vegetable that's rich in certain nutrients called lutein and zeaxanthin, I don't know if you've ever heard of these nutrients. They're like the eye health nutrients or the eye vitamins, I like to call them. These two nutrients, lutein, zeaxanthin, they are deposited by the body right into the macula and they serve as shields. They actually help to protect against UV light, against blue light, and they fight against oxidative stress. So if you have a diet that's rich in lutein and zeaxanthin, you can eat foods that are rich in these nutrients like leafy greens, orange peppers, yellow peppers, eggs are great sources. Corn is a great source, non-GMO corn. You can increase your intake of these vitamins that will protect your eyes. And there's a 47% decrease in the risk for macular degeneration if you have a diet that's rich in those nutrients.
So you can actually prevent it if it is genetically there?
Yes, your genetics puts you at risk, but then you have the epigenetics. What's your diet like? What's your environment like? Are you exposed to toxins like smoking or fumes? Are you exercising? Are you overweight? Do you have a lot of stress in your life? Like, you have to think about all of those things as well, that may increase your risk from the baseline genetic risk. So not everybody who has the gene will develop it. So there's a lot people can do. And actually, my next book, I already have one, but my next coming out in probably in the summer of 2024 is on macular degeneration. So I talk about all the integrative and functional medicine strategies that people can use to help prevent macular degeneration.
I'd love for you to come back on when and we could dive all into just that, because I think it's an important one. I'm sure a lot of people are dealing with it, or their parents. Or their parents are.
And it's a leading cause of blindness, and it's preventable blindness. That's what really, you know, it makes me so sad, because a lot of these cases, many of them could have been prevented.
Okay.
People knew kind of all the things that they could do to prevent.
Okay.
I'll ask my patients, you know, they'll say, oh yeah, I'll ask them, do you have enough fruits and vegetables in your diet? How much do you have? I have plenty. And then when I really get into it, they'll say, oh, okay, so I have a burger, and then I put some lettuce on the burger, a slice of tomato. And that's their intake for the week.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's not enough. You know, you need to start bumping it up. So then I tell them 5 cups a day, and they're like, no. And, you know, then I explain how they can do it. Then they kind of calm down a little bit, but it is doable. You can work yourself up to that,
yes.
But it really is focusing on those fruits and vegetables that have high levels of lutein and zeaxanthin,
yes.
And also omega-3s. I want to mention this also. Omega-3s, and we know that they have many health benefits, heart benefits, brain benefits, skin benefits, but they also benefit our eyes. So make sure you're getting a good intake of omega-3s, either through diet or from supplementation.
Okay. Through fish, fatty fish, like fish, salmon, right?
Fish, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a small amount that can be, if you're like, I'm vegetarian, for example, I don't eat fish or meat, but, I get mine through seeds that, you know, the omegas in seeds can sometimes somewhat be converted to DHA, EPA, but also you can take an algal supplement. Like I do an algal, omega supplement.
Okay.
So there's a lot people can do it. I think it's just a matter of, you know, figuring out what is best for you, because it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's not the same thing that's going to work for everybody. Talk to your doctor about it. What's your risk? There are actually risk calculators online for macular degeneration. So we can talk about this, you know, maybe next time once my book comes out, we can talk about how you can use the risk calculator to figure out how much you're at risk and then what else you can do for prevention.
And prevention, go get that eye exam. Right? Because they're going to be able to pick it up.
That's the low-hanging fruit. Absolutely.
Yes. Before we wrap up, so you've written 2 books, and obviously you do believe nutrition is vital. And so what else do you want us to take away? So it's the 5 cups of fruit and veg. Is that the key message as it relates to nutrition?
I have a whole bunch of recommendations or strategies in my book, Beyond Carrots. I also recommend promoting gut health. So, you know, being a functional medicine doctor, the gut is like the core of everything in terms of rebalancing all your issues, all your medical issues, particularly autoimmune issues, inflammatory issues. So the same holds true for eye issues. There's a lot of early research being done, looking at the link between the gut microbiome and our eye health. Mm-hmm. And again, it's early research, but it just tells me that we just have to keep our guts healthy. So yes, we may not yet know, okay, which particular organism is responsible for dry eye or which particular organism is responsible for macular degeneration. But we know that, okay, if we promote the healthy organisms, those pathogenic bacteria may not be able to grow. So I always recommend promoting a healthy gut, probiotics, live probiotics, prebiotics, postbiotics. It's important to support gut health for so many reasons, including your eyes.
Yes. And thoughts on supplementation then? Any particular supplements for eye health that you're a huge fan of? I see you. I know you have your own. I'm looking at them literally on your bookshelf behind us. But what are you a fan of in terms of supplementation?
Okay, so first of all, I would say because most of us run screens every day, all the time.
Yes,
adults. Most of us should
and
be
our
taking
kiddos now. You just see, like, from 2 years old up, like they're just
they're all on their iPads and
yes,
biting and lutein and zeaxanthin are really the two nutrients that are so important that we're just not getting enough of from our diet. So if you're going to choose a supplement, choose a supplement with lutein zeaxanthin. In my supplement, I also have mesozeaxanthin, which is a third carotenoid, macular carotenoid, which is also important for retinal health and macular degeneration. Astaxanthin is another up-and-coming one. A lot of people are using astaxanthin for skin health, for cognitive health, for anti-aging, but it's also been shown to be helpful for eye health. Okay. So look for a supplement that has that. And also, think about your multi. So I have a couple of different products in my line. I have the eye health one, which is called Fortify, but I also have a multi that has everything a regular multi has, like all the vitamins, the B vitamins, C, D, E, all the minerals, but it also has bioflavonoids. And I don't know if your listeners have ever heard really of bioflavonoids, but they're plant compounds that protect plants from disease. They protect plants from infections and inflammation and oxidative stress. So we, when we ingest those plant compounds, they help protect us as well. So compounds like anthocyanins and quercetin, which people may have heard of, broccoli seed extract, these are all important for eye health. So if you're going to get a multi, you know, yes, there's Centrum one a day. You can get it off the shelf. It's cheap. It's accessible. But I would recommend if you really, if you're worried about your eyes, make sure your multi has all of the basic things a multi has, but also the bioflavonoids. So that's what mine has. I have a multi called Nourish, and it has the full spectrum of nutrients that we need for general health, but also for eye health. And then take a good omega. I mean, I would say that's really, really important. Take a good omega supplement as well.
Okay. What do you have for breakfast every day?
So when I have time, I make myself a smoothie and preferably a green smoothie. And I was just explaining this to my ophthalmology colleagues this morning at the grand rounds I gave. Make a green smoothie, pack in, I was saying 5 cups of fruits and veggies a day. You can get 4 cups in with a green smoothie every day. Pack in 3 cups of leafy greens, whether it's spinach, kale, arugula, whatever you like, 3 cups of leafy greens. Pack in 1 cup of berries, preferably dark berries. So blueberries, blackberries, even raspberries and strawberries are great. 1 cup of berries, add in some seeds, chia seeds, hemp seeds, flax seeds, add in some protein powder if you want, your choice of milk and ice. Mix it up, and that's a great breakfast. And it will, in one go, you can basically take care of your eye nutrition needs for the rest of the day. So why not? Then you don't have to think about it. Oh, did I have this today? Did I have that today? Yes. If you do it in the morning, you're done for the day. And the other thing I have with that is I actually have a turmeric ginger smoothie. Turmeric ginger tea. I am a huge fan of turmeric. And so I combine it with ginger. It helps with my headaches. It helps with general inflammation, et cetera. So that's basically what I have.
And do you use a powder? Or is it like powder. Okay, so you're making your own. It's not like one that you're buying, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So like a teaspoon of turmeric or?
Yeah, I grind it up. So it's almost like a paste because it's with ginger too. Yeah.
Okay. That's lovely. So we'll try that. We covered so much today. What didn't I ask you that you want to make sure the women take away from this conversation?
I think we've touched upon it in certain ways, though. It's really so important. Like, we take our eyes for granted. We shouldn't, right? Because there's so many things that can happen that could steal our vision away. So we should be proactive about our eyes. Do what we need to do to keep them healthy. See your eye doctor, eat right for your sight, wear your sunglasses. Like, these are all simple preventative strategies. Stay hydrated, take your omegas, you know, think about all that. Take an eye health supplement. Simple, simple things we can all do. And I know that, again, perimenopause, menopause, they're really challenging times for so many reasons, not just your eyes, but your whole body seems to be changing and sometimes even falling apart. And sometimes people feel their eyes are falling apart, but there are solutions out there. And you just need to seek them out. And if your eye care provider, you know, is not forthcoming with them, then look elsewhere and find a doctor that you can work with who can really work with you to optimize your vision. For people who are in New York, I'm happy to see you if you're interested to see me. But I also offer an online course called Ageless Eyes. Mm. And in the online course, I go through different modules like the dry eye module, the light sensitivity module, the presbyopia module. By the way, presbyopia is not being able to see up close and needing reading glasses. So, and then the youthful module, which talks about the aging changes like dark circles, bags and sags, fine lines and creases around the eyes. So I cover all of that to give people, to empower women with the knowledge that they need so that then they can take that knowledge to their eye doctor and say, am I a candidate for this? Can I try this? What about this? So I think if people are empowered with that knowledge, then they're their own health advocates, and then they can really make the difference for themselves.
I love this so much. Three quick rapid fire questions. As an ophthalmologist, sure. I would never knowing
rub
what
my
you
eyes.
Do. Rub your own.
Rub
no.
My eyes.
I'm guilty. Okay. Tell us why quickly.
No,
just tell us why quick.
Allergies and we want to rub.
Yeah.
But when you rub, it just makes it worse. So please don't do that.
Okay. A little cold water or something. That's what.
Yeah.
That?
Cold compresses.
Yeah. Okay.
Rinse it. Please don't rub your eyes.
Okay. As an ophthalmologist, knowing what I do, I always
make sure I support my internal blue blockers, which are lutein and zeaxanthin, rather than to wear just blue blocking glasses.
Okay, that's great. And then I always ask my guests, just to wrap it up, what does designing a good life mean to you? What does that mean today for you?
It means not just living healthily, but really thriving. And I think this is something that has come up a lot in health circles over the past year, is really being your best self, mentally, physically, and spiritually. And so, yes, we can have the basics in place, but you know, you really have to enjoy life. And so it means putting it all together and thriving.
I've loved this conversation. Everyone listening today, please share this with a friend. I feel like it's so important. We're not talking about eye health enough. Like I said, I've done almost 300 interviews and I saw you online. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so important. And I'm so grateful for your expertise. All of the show notes for today will be over at thegoodlifecoach.com, and you can actually find every link on your podcast player. So Dr. Rani, tell us, give us your website, your handles. And again, all of this will be literally, if you're on Apple Podcasts, you just scroll down in the show notes and the links are there direct. So you don't even have to go to the website.
Yeah. So my website's the best way to get resources.
Yes.
I have a lot of resources on there, as well as the links to all my products, my supplements, books, courses, et cetera. It's www.drraniebannick.com. Very simple. And then I'm also on Instagram. So if any of your listeners are on Instagram, I post a lot. Eye health, but also migraine. I post a lot about migraine. I know a lot of women, especially in this age group, suffer from migraine. So simple tips, natural tips to help manage your migraine. And then I also have a YouTube channel. So it's my full name, RudraniBannickMD.com.
Okay. And all of those links will be on the show notes over at thegoodlifecoach.com and in the podcast app. Yes, I could do like a part two and part three. I mean, all of this is so interesting and so important. So thank you so much for your time today and for the work you're doing in the world.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you gained some new information or inspiration for your life. That is that the essence of this show is to really wake up to what's possible for you, to reclaim your beautiful voice, and to really learn to love and prioritize yourself. So if you gained any value from any of the conversations you've tuned into, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. You can do that right now on your phone. And please do consider leaving a rating and review if you have yet to do so on Apple Podcasts. It's actually how more women can find the show, and I really want to grow a community of women who are loving themselves and living full on. So thank you as always for tuning in, and I look forward to reconnecting with you next Wednesday. Bye for now.
This podcast is presented for entertainment and educational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to be a substitute for medical, mental health, or other professional advice. Seek out your trusted healthcare provider or other qualified professional for all matters dealing with your health and well-being. Any opinions or information provided by a guest are their own and not those of Michelle Lamoureux or the company.